This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivinsky.
Hour number two of the Diehards officially starts now. Bobby Krivinsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. We got Brian McDonald producing the show back in Houston. Brendan, I don't know if you share my Twitter addiction or not, but something that has gone viral recently is that Will Levis, quarterback of Kentucky, NFL prospect, has shared with the world his disgusting habit, and I can see it in your face that you're on board with that assessment, that he puts mayonnaise in his coffee. That's how Will Levis starts his day. By the way, just to add to it, this is the same Will Levis who went viral last year when he shared with the world that he eats bananas without peeling them.
Interesting cat. But I guess some people like dairy products in their coffee. Some choose cream. Some go with milk. Others go with, I guess, mayonnaise in this case. I'm not a big mayonnaise guy, so just even the thought of that going into a sweet thing like a coffee, which is one of my favorite things in the world to begin my day, just makes me kind of grimace. It makes me kind of sick.
The two don't jive. And I like mayonnaise, especially put some sriracha in there. Now it's an aioli. Goes on a lot of things. Makes it better. Some people hate mayonnaise. Totally understand. To each their own. But mayonnaise and coffee is simply something that, as a society, we cannot let stand.
No, just can't do it. I can't do it. Like, just looking at the video, I'm watching it on social media right now. Just the contents don't mix together. It's you see,
oh,
the
you watch
stuff
it go oil, in, and it's heavy.
It's all oily and heavy and
how
floating
do you start
on top
your
of
day
that
with mayonnaise?
I can't do it. Like, sure, maybe you get a nice calorie boost. You get that extra fat. Nice. I think it's 16 grams of fat per 1 ounce serving of mayonnaise or something disgusting like that. Maybe you get
you're already behind the eight ball.
You get a little bit of energy boost from that fat and caffeine mixing together. I guess I don't understand the appeal behind it.
When he gets to the NFL, I would imagine that his team's nutritionist is going to tell him, "Will, this has to end now. Try Splenda,
please."
It's got to be over. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, Brendan and I are going to give you your opinion about who should be taking the swing and mortgaging what it would take to acquire Kevin Durant. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivinsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivinsky, excuse me, peanut butter on the roof of the mouth, alongside Brendan Connolly. Brendan, we've talked MLB, we've talked NFL, and we will again later in the program. But let's talk about the NBA for a little bit. As Chris Curtis referenced, what's hanging over the league is where will Kevin Durant be playing next season? In your opinion, is there a team that you look at and say, I know it's going to cost a lot, but they should be willing to pay that price to bring him in?
They should or they could. I mean, I'm looking at a team that could, in theory, make this deal. One of the few out there, and it's the Boston Celtics. And that's because they have the pieces available to make said deal, meaning Jaylen Brown, the pick swaps that they need, and either Marcus Smart and another ancillary piece. Now, do they want to do that deal? I don't know.
I don't think they do.
I don't know if they do.
I don't think they do.
It's all about finding Brown's commitment. I don't think I feel like Brown, over the last few weeks, has shown that he is committed to the Celtics in other forms via social media for the most part. That's the team I could see executing the deal that has the capital to do it. Around the rest of the league, you have to get very creative. Very creative for the most part, unless you want to send him to a team that really isn't going to contend for a title immediately.
Yeah, there's a bunch of teams who are somewhat reluctant. So, for instance, I look at the Toronto Raptors and say, you can't get Durant without giving up Scottie Barnes, but you might do that, and in 2 years from now, Durant forces his way out of Canada. And so it's just it's too substantial of a risk. Plus, you're not that far removed from renting out Kawhi Leonard and having it pay off with a championship. You don't really need to go for that same approach so soon on the heels of that. You still have that capital, that equity bought from the Kawhi Leonard title run. So to me, the Raptors hold on to Scottie Barnes, which also means sitting out the KD sweepstakes. A team that I look at, though, and say, yeah, it's going to cost you, but it's ultimately worth it, the Philadelphia 76ers. Yes, you have to part with Tyrese Maxey. There's no getting around it. But if you all of a sudden have Embiid, and we don't know how long the window is open around him to begin with, and James Harden is your third best player behind the process and Kevin Durant, that, to me, you could convince me is the best team in the league, and certainly it's capable of winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
Do you think James Harden and Kevin Durant would mesh together after the recent project in Brooklyn, or do you think that was more of a Kyrie Irving result?
It was driven by Kyrie, and it's one of those instances where Harden wasn't wrong for feeling the way he felt about Irving's lack of commitment, which is interesting because have you looked in the mirror, James? But nonetheless, I do think that Durant and Harden, I would imagine, have a good enough relationship, at least in the past, that they could put this behind them. I mean, Durant is about to watch it blow up in Brooklyn over Kyrie Irving. I would think that he can at least be on board with it if Philadelphia seems like the most attractive destination.
Yeah, you could definitely see that, especially you'd have to basically paint it as a place where he could win a title, because I feel like that's what Kevin Durant really wants to do, and it feels like that's what's been driving him. Kevin Durant's this weird breed where I feel like he got the brand early and out of the way, and now he's just chasing titles left and right. He doesn't care what city he does it in. He doesn't care about his legacy on that front as long as he's winning.
What's interesting is, and legacy is exactly where this conversation needs to go, is that I think when he went to Brooklyn, he thought, even though Kyrie steered him more towards the Nets than the Knicks, I think that Durant thought, I'm picking the franchise, I'm picking the partner, it's clearly a 1B, as amazing as Kyrie Irving is, and so I think that this will help my legacy, because I'm sure in his mind he thought, we're winning at least one championship, maybe more, as long as I stay healthy, and it hasn't played out that way. So I think that leaving Brooklyn, depending on where he goes, you know, if he were to, let's just call it crazy, and go to Oklahoma City and win a championship with the team he began his career with, big win for the legacy. A lot of points involved there.
That's a team that has the assets to pull it off because, as we all know, they have acquired an exorbitant amount of draft picks.
All of the picks.
Basically every pick there is for the next 10 years. So they have the capital. I could definitely see them trying to swing a deal. The question is, would Kevin Durant end up going out there and doing it in, you know, the way he, in a calm way? I would say, I don't know. That's a tough way to.
And there's other spots too, but I just think that Durant at this point, he doesn't care about the legacy thing. He looks at it as other people get to decide his legacy, and he's over it. So it's a little bit, it parallels in some ways LeBron after 2011 and choking against the Mavs. A big way he got over that was by saying, I just don't care what other people think anymore. Let them say and do as they please, which is kind of not true because he loves to control the media narrative.
Of course he does.
But nonetheless, to a large extent, he did stop caring about the court of public opinion. And so I think Durant is, he's kind of resigned himself to that category of whatever happens, whatever might be best for my legacy. It's so shredded at this point from going to Golden State and the way this Brooklyn thing is unfolding that I just want to go somewhere. I think I can win a championship. And if that's back to Golden State and that's what I want to do, whatever it might be that I feel is best for my career, screw what everyone else has to say.
That's basically all he can do at this point. You've gone through so many hurdles, so many crazy moments on social media, so many funny moments on the court, and painful ones at that as well. Might as well just focus on winning and getting the next ring. And it doesn't matter where you go. Just focus on what's best for you.
Exactly. Let's talk about Kevin Durant's soon-to-be former running mate in Kyrie Irving. The Lakers talks seem like they're falling apart. It's almost like the Nets aren't willing to stomach acquiring Russell Westbrook. I can't imagine why. And so here we are with the only team that has shown interest in acquiring Irving. They don't have the pieces, and the Nets rightfully are not about to cave. Is it crazy to think that Kyrie Irving sits out this entire season?
No, just given the type of player he is and what he's done in the past, I wouldn't be surprised if he just sat out given the situation. For Kyrie, it's about Kyrie. That's what we know at this point. And I just don't get the sense that he is happy in Brooklyn. I don't get the sense that Kevin Durant is happy in Brooklyn. So I would not be surprised in the slightest if we saw Irving sit out for an extended period. Now, Durant, on the other hand, I think he has more to play for, so I don't see him sitting out.
No, Durant's not sitting out no matter where he is. I'd be shocked by that. Doesn't seem realistic at all. But with Irving, especially if the Nets trade Durant, they're going to say, hey, we definitely don't want you. You're at the root of all of this. And so if they tell him, we don't want you on the court or a part of the organization, we can't get what we desire, so just do whatever it is that you want to do. Have fun, Kyrie, but you're not really a part of the Nets organization. And if something pops up between now and the trade deadline that we like a Ben Simmons, James Harden type scenario, and a team is willing to take you on as a rental, then we'll do it. But we're also prepared to just not take on any negative assets like a Westbrook and spend more money than your contract is worth, $11 million extra at that, and lose you for technically nothing in free agency.
It's a crazy route, and I don't see the Nets ever just caving and just parting ways with these assets for nothing. Just get the most you can. Do the exact opposite of what you've been doing in past years, where you've let other teams fleece you one time after the next. This time, if the Nets can figure this out, the best way to win a championship in their mind would probably be to keep these guys in town and just get it to work. As I think Brian Windhorst pointed out on ESPN earlier today, I don't see it happening, though. It's just going to be... It's a very tough spot to be if you're Brooklyn.
What's interesting is, at the start of this, what the Nets offered was 2 years fully guaranteed and the rest not. And that ticked off Irving. He wouldn't commit to that. I wonder if the situation has reached a point, especially with where talks are at, with the Lakers seemingly cooling off. Would Kyrie sign a 2 year, you know, a 1 year extension, so he's got two? Would the Nets give it to him? It'd be really interesting to see because, again, like you said, the best possible outcome for Brooklyn is probably to have Kevin Durant. And if you have Kyrie, then you're at least a championship contender.
You're in the mix.
His head is on straight.
You're in the mix, at least, if they're playing and they're all playing to the best of their abilities and they're healthy. Because the Nets only added this offseason. They haven't blown it up like we expected. They added T.J. Warren and a few other pieces that could easily provide them that scoring off the bench that they were desperately missing last year. But there's a lot of unanswered questions still to be heard.
So much uncertainty. It seems like they're willing to blow it up, even though they would have a chance at a championship if they don't. The message is clear because all their draft picks are gone for the short term here. So they want to be able to be a competitive team, even if they move on from Durant and Irving this offseason. So they would like promising players, perhaps someone who's made an all-star game, along with a couple picks to help massage the situation. But beggars can't be choosers, and a lot of teams look at Durant. We're talking about this changing dynamic in the MLB, and they say he's unbelievable, but we don't know how long he would stay here, so we really want to give up someone we think is committed to this franchise.
It's a very risky play, but if you do bite the bullet and deal away your assets and bring in Durant, you're immediately in the conversation. Even if you're a low-hanging team that's been struggling for any success whatsoever, you're instantly a playoff team right there. In there on that one move. So it's worth the risk, I think, if you're a certain team. But will you pull the trigger?
Time will tell. Stick with us here on the Diehards, because on the other side of this break, Brendan and I are going to give you our assessment of some teams who are right on the line between championship contention and actually more falling into the category of pretenders and fugazis. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Brendan, let's continue this dialogue about teams in the NBA, and let's move the conversation over to who we think is a legitimate championship contender and who we think is just a pretender, a fugazi, as I said before the break. Let's start out west with a team that really shocked people by how well they fared last year. They had the second best record in the entire NBA, but was that an outlier, or do you think that the Memphis Grizzlies are a legitimate championship contender?
Championship contender, I'm not too sure about, but definitely a contender in the Western Conference. I think they can definitely make some noise. Ja Morant is only going to be 1 year better, and he emerged as one of the NBA's best players last season. I expect them to make a run at a Western Conference title.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where, and again, on the Dyers, we do not straddle the fence, but I look at the Grizzlies, and championship contention around this young core that, let's be honest, overachieved last year, that's too rich for my blood. So in this all-or-nothing game with no nuance to it, pretender. Really good, can get to the Western Conference Finals. Do I believe that they will emerge to represent them in the NBA Finals, let alone win the Larry O'Brien Trophy? No, I do not. So, excellent team, one of the most fun young stars in the league, but pretender for this discussion.
Okay.
Let's keep it moving. We'll stick in the Western Conference. The New Orleans Pelicans, they made a big move at the deadline last year to get C.J. McCollum, also brought in Larry Nance, a helpful rotation piece. Now they get Zion back, who's got a large extension. Do you look at this team and say, you know what, they've put the pieces together, including Brandon Ingram. They're a title contender now.
I'm going to say they're a pretender, because until Zion Williamson proves to me that he can stay on the court and stay healthy and stay fit, I don't think the Pelicans are going to contend for a title anytime soon.
If I told you that Zion finishes the postseason healthy, would you buy them as a championship contender?
I would still not buy them as a championship contender. I buy them as a playoff team. I just don't see them contending in that very loaded conference.
So again, the Durant thing hangs over all of this, and if the Lakers come away with Kyrie Irving, you're saying the Nets just take the assets and deal with it. Maybe they decide a couple first-round picks from Los Angeles are ultimately worth it. We'll stomach a season of Russell Westbrook to make that happen. And so if all of a sudden Irving is a member of the Purple and Gold, they are, in my opinion, the best team in the West, at least on paper. But I look at the Pelicans and say, we're in a new reality for the NBA where it's not these big threes, or let alone Golden State plus Durant. And so I think the Pelicans, if Zion is performing up to expectations and available for them, they have the pieces. There's some ironing out that needs to be done. Him and Ingram weren't exactly a seamless pairing last time Williamson was on the court. But I do think that they have a dynamic group of really talented individuals. Plus, I really liked their draft pick, a point guard, Dyson Daniels, who's a defensive-minded guy with length and versatility. I think he fits because he also doesn't need shots at the other end. I think that this team checks a lot of boxes, and Willie Green is a really good coach, that they could, in fact, compete for a title in this day and age.
I was wondering why the Pelicans were on the list. Now I know why. You've definitely had some research on there. I still just, until I see Zion Williamson put a full season together, I'm just not buying in on them.
That's fair. I'm never going to go against the I'll believe it when I see it type of approach. I certainly think that they have that ability. Of course, it all revolves around Williamson, and can he be healthy? Can he perform up to the rather large, perhaps unrealistic at the moment, expectations? But when he was on a court, Brandon, he did look pretty good. I'll keep it moving now. We'll head to the East Coast, where it's a team we talked about. I said they should go all in for Kevin Durant. As constructed without him, are the Philadelphia 76ers a legitimate championship contender?
I'm going to say they're a pretender, and they're close. They're very, very close. They're definitely in the conversation to compete for the Eastern Conference title. I think James Harden's over the hill at this point in his career. He's not the same MVP candidate we're used to seeing, and Joel Embiid just can't carry a whole team by himself, even though he's come pretty darn close to doing so once in a while. I'm going to list them as a pretender.
I'm underwhelmed by the offseason that they've had, and that's with the discount from Harden, which is so important for this team, at least right now. What happens next year when he opts out? What does that next contract look like, and is it with Philly to begin with? That's a different discussion, but even with that win, at least in the short term, the big addition is P.J. Tucker after what happened last year. I mean,
and he's so old.
He's 37.
And he's so old.
Love P.J. Tucker, and I still think that he can be P.J. Tucker, but it just doesn't move the needle enough. You don't get enough offensive juice from a player like that. So I look at the Sixers, and I'm with you. I don't think they're a legitimate championship contender unless James Harden, and I love his approach this offseason, and he needs to stay disciplined during the season. You can't lose the weight now and then put it on and have your traditional late-night haberdashery and, you know, you eat at some spots you wouldn't either or shouldn't. You know, a lot of late-night empty calories. That's not going to work during the season just because you weren't doing it over the summer, James.
Enjoying some Lou Williams wings or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. And so I think that could Harden, I'm not going to rule out a player. Remember, Brendan, it wasn't that long ago that we thought Chris Paul was one of the worst contracts in the NBA.
Turned it around.
He certainly has changed his current image of the type of player that he is. So to me, I'm not going to completely disregard Harden, and That could vault the Sixers into legitimate championship contention, but he's still not a good defender. And even in his prime, when we had less concerns about these same questions, he was called Little Game James for a reason and not known for showing up when his team needed him the most. So to me, I do look at it and say Harden could have a great season, but come playoff time, his reputation is what it is. I'll believe it when I see it.
He's a no-show once he gets to the playoffs, and again, I just don't see Joel Embiid just single-handedly carrying that team to the title. If James Harden returns to that MVP candidate he was, then that'll change my opinion. If he starts putting up 40 to 45 points every other night, then watch out. Philly's for real.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't think he has that in him. I don't think
he'd
get the touches either alongside Embiid compared to a Dwight Howard, for instance.
Exactly.
Could be putting up, 40 points or more. And let's go to the West now as this game continues. We'll talk about the purple and gold as constructed. It's LeBron. It's Anthony Davis. Is that good enough to place them into legitimate title contender status?
If Anthony Davis is healthy, then yes, the Lakers are always going to be a title contender. I would never take them out of that grouping. And if Russell Westbrook figures it out, things work out there, they should be in contention for a title. I'm going to put them as a contender this year.
So I don't think they're as good as the Suns, who were ultimately kept DeAndre Ayton. Massive for them, because at one point it seemed like they don't want Miles Turner, and Ayton might just walk for nothing.
Right.
And at that point, they're in this conversation, and I'm saying pretender, especially with Chris Paul at his age. But they keep Ayton. I think that they have a reason to claim that they are once again the best team in the West, like they were at least during the regular season before it fell apart for them. You look at the Clippers with Kawhi and PG, if they're healthy, they could logically say that, hey, we're better than what the Lakers have when you look at the question marks on the premier team in L.A. and that supporting cast where they're not good defensively. They don't have enough three-point shooting or athleticism. So to me, yes, LeBron and AD, you're a title contender, but I also think they're like the last team on this list.
Yeah, I would definitely keep them in that contending group, because as long as Anthony Davis shows up and is on the court for a whole season, they should be there. Like, I can't think of a better big man out there outside of maybe Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's even if you want to group him in that slot. I look at him as kind of a power forward in a lot of ways. But if Anthony Davis is out there, LeBron's out there and engaged, the Lakers will be there at the end. They usually are.
Yeah, exactly. And how can you write off LeBron, especially these two guys are going to be extra motivated after missing the playoffs, not to mention a little more time off tends to do a 38-year-old body some good. Plus, Anthony Davis,
That's the key. That's the linchpin in all this. If Anthony Davis stays healthy, and it's easier said than done, because 1 year he plays the full season or at least like 75% of it, the next he misses 80 games. You just never know what you're going
to
get.
And they've gotten on him about that, hey, we would like to pass the baton from LeBron to you, but you need to be available for this franchise for that to happen. Otherwise, it can't. And Anthony Davis last year made the mistake. He bulked up. He prepared his body to play more at the center position. But really, he's best when he's more built, that lean frame. You know, Giannis is jacked, but he's also not particularly thick, right?
Right.
Kevin Garnett, that type of a build is what's best for Anthony Davis on the court. And it seems this offseason like he's getting back to that.
Yes, definitely. He just had to lose a little weight, put less on those limbs of yours.
Take the mayo out of the coffee.
Take the mayo out of the darn coffee, for crying out loud. You don't need the added layer of fat and the poundage up there. It just kills the knees. And a guy at his position, you can't afford to be dealing with that extra poundage, for sure.
And then the last team on this list here, the Denver Nuggets, led by the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic.
Contender.
Contender, without a doubt?
Without a doubt. I'm not even going to pause there. They're getting back another MVP candidate that they missed the entire year. This is a team that went on a pretty decent playoff run, even without one of their superstars. Jamal Murray comes back from his ACL. Still got to see how he looks, see how that leg heals up. I think the Nuggets are going to be right in the contention for a title next
year. With a healthy Murray and Michael Porter Jr., are they the best team in the West?
Yeah, I think you could say that. Possibly, yeah, for sure.
They certainly have a strong shot at it. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Dallas Cowboys, Lamar Jackson, and some guy named Brady. That's coming up next on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Brendan, it's time to play a little buy or sell NFL edition. Why don't we start with the most important position in all of sports? In your opinion, Mac Jones, he had the best season of any rookie quarterback last season. Do you buy or sell that among the second-year signal callers, the same will hold true again?
I'm actually going to sell, and I think it's going to be close. I think he's going to be up there, but he's going to have pedestrian numbers. He's going to find ways to get the Patriots to get wins. He'll have better numbers than last year, but I actually think Zach Wilson's going to take that next leap for the Jets this year. Personally, on the field, I don't know if he's going to give the Jets any more wins, but I think he's going to have a drastically improved season.
So that's a totally fair guess. I also love that it's not who I was thinking you might say. I'm thinking Justin Fields, or perhaps the reason that I'm also going to sell. You know this is coming by now. Our loyal listeners certainly are aware that I am the lieutenant behind Mama Lance in the Trey Lance fan club. And so I think that he's in the perfect system with Kyle Shanahan as his coach. And that you're getting a quarterback here. They still have their weapons. It seems like it's headed towards an extension with Debo Samuel. They've obviously got Kittle at tight end. And so I look at it and say, you're adding a more mobile quarterback than Garoppolo, and it's not close in that department, with a stronger arm. He's also got a high football IQ. So how far does he go his first season at the helm? Anyone's guess. But I do bet that he leads the Niners into the playoffs, most likely a wild card berth, and ultimately puts up better numbers than Mac Jones, who has so much to overcome from not having a true number one target to a real questionable offensive coaching staff
right
around him with Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. So I look at the obstacles that Mac Jones has to overcome and what's in place for Trey Lance, and I'll take Trey Lance.
Interesting call. See, I think I just think Wilson has the explosive ability with added pieces to have a better season. Trevor Lawrence, I don't know if he has the coaching down there at this moment yet or the pieces around him to succeed.
Doug Peterson, not the quarterback whisperer?
I don't think so. I do think Mac Jones and Zach Wilson have the best chance to succeed, but the fact that Trey Lance has the running capabilities, that's a whole other dynamic that completely changed the conversation.
For sure. And then in the AFC West, it's the most challenging division in football. Do you think that it is so talented that all four teams go on to make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no. I think it's just too hard of an ask. You've got too loaded of a conference. The AFC in general is pretty loaded across the board. So I feel like one of those great teams is going to be left out on the outside looking in. Maybe the, I don't know, you could pick one out of a hat. Maybe the Chargers this year, even though I think Herbert's great and can definitely take him to the next level. Maybe Russell Wilson's weapons just don't get the job done. They're all talented. They all have the abilities to make the playoffs.
Yeah, like you said, you could pick it out of a hat, and it could just as easily be who's going to miss the playoffs versus who's going to win the division. The Chargers are my pick to do the latter because they've added defensively with Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson at cornerback, the best one on the free agent market this past offseason. And then you have Herbert. Growth isn't always linear, but you would expect another step forward. They kept Mike Williams as well. So that team is absolutely loaded. And I look at the Chargers and think that this team probably wins the most challenging division in football, is going to be able to compete for the Lombardi Trophy. And by the way, new playoff format as of last year, 7 teams get to the dance. I think they all get in. I look at that competition and say, you know, they're competing with the Patriots, who, I have the Raiders at the bottom of the division.
I was going to say, the Raiders have all the talent in the world on paper, but can they put it together in an equation on the field?
And I would think that Josh McDaniels should help. Maybe it's another coaching opportunity
gone
wrong.
They've got Devontae Adams now.
Yeah, and so I look at this team, Chandler Jones across from Max Crosby.
It's pretty stacked, even though it's a team you're projecting that might finish at the bottom.
Well, so
might.
The natural line is, who are you taking out of the playoffs to put the Raiders in there? Great question. By the way, reminder, they made it last year, so they would just be treading water. But even so, the Titans are in for a major step back. I don't believe in Tannehill whatsoever. It's another year.
Derrick Henry is going to have that Liz
they
Frank
lose
injury.
AJ Brown. They move on from Julio Jones, which didn't work out for them. And then you look at the Bengals probably win their division. And so at that point, the Ravens, there's room for them to get in, and so the Browns, how much Deshaun Watson are they going to have, potentially, if at all, even though I bet he plays. The Patriots have so many concerns. I think all four teams in a playoff format where seven get in on each side, that ultimately I buy this one.
I think one team out of that group misses it. Just last week of the season, they just the dominoes fall where they may, and they just get the short end of the stick.
It's more likely to happen that way. I'll give you that. I'm willing to take the gamble.
There's going to be like a 7-10 team or a
the one with
eight,
the largest payout
team.
Is that all four make it. So that'd
be great.
That's what I'm going to the window with. And then let's stick in the AFC West. Buy or sell that the Chiefs offense without Tyreek Hill, one of the biggest matchup nightmares in the NFL, maybe at the top of that list, that the Kansas City offense won't miss a beat without him.
Won't miss a beat. I'm going to sell that. I mean, you're giving away one of the best receivers in the entire league here and arguably the most explosive weapon in your offense of the last few seasons. Travis Kelce's also a year older. I think last season was his least productive in the last five seasons or so. I think Kansas City could be in for a big step back now. Are they going to miss the playoffs? No. You've got, unless Patrick Mahomes, God forbid, gets his ACL taken out in week two or something, the Chiefs will probably be in the playoffs. They will still be a threat to be in the Super Bowl. But I do expect their offense to take a giant step backwards.
It's not uncommon for a team to lose one of its best players, reallocate those resources, mainly the cap space, and ultimately come out at least in the same place, if not ahead. Seen it plenty of times across sports. Nonetheless, when I look at who the Chiefs are now investing in at the skill positions, Marquez Valdes-Scantling had plenty of years for him to pop with Aaron Rodgers, and it didn't work. So now it's supposed to happen with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's another year older, so maybe...
It's basically just a younger version of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm just not buying into Valdes-Scantling sight unseen, and it's not like the quarterback change is really going to make him come out ahead all of a sudden. And then I look at Juju Smith-Schuster. This is a guy with durability concerns who doesn't love coming across the middle of the field. He tends to struggle to hold on to the football. So a good player. He could have a career year with Mahomes.
He's been on a downward spiral.
Buyer beware. There's a reason that the Steelers didn't mind seeing him walk out the door.
If there is a place where I think he could have a resurrection, it's Kansas City, though.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's a distinct possibility that he looks more like the guy he was when he first came into league, but there's a lot of concerns that I have about Juju while acknowledging that he could have a Pro Bowl caliber season or close to it. But, I mean, you're just not the same explosive offense that at times has opposing fan bases feeling like, well, this is unfair, that this is what we have to go up against. The type of offense that can take a kickoff and then score going nearly the length of the field in 13 seconds in a playoff game against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Kansas City, you're not that team anymore.
No, unfortunately, because that was one of the greatest games ever. Like,
yes.
I will miss those crazy plays where you just saw Kansas City walk up the field in 2 seconds. Certainly will miss it for fantasy purposes, because I could always bet on Kansas City delivering me a championship.
Without a doubt, always good options to ride in fantasy football. We talked about Patrick Mahomes, another great quarterback, Lamar Jackson, but he's really yet to show it in the postseason. He has one career playoff win, and he's thrown three postseason touchdowns to five interceptions. Is this the year that the former MVP has a breakout playoff performance?
I think the trend is unfortunately going to continue, and that's just because the AFC, I already said it earlier in this segment, is just so deep this year. Every team can knock off one another. And I just feel like the Ravens didn't improve drastically around Lamar Jackson. They added a few pieces here and there, but did they really go over the top to improve? I consider them in kind of a similar boat to the Patriots. Like, they added a few ancillary pieces, a few key pieces at the draft to address needs, but in reality, they stayed in essentially the same spot. So I could see them losing again in the first round.
I think the Ravens were underrated with how well they did despite injuries, namely to Jackson last season, mm-hmm. where they looked like a sure bet to make the playoffs, and then he goes down, and they're fighting for their lives, and they don't get in. I'm not sure they get in this year. They lose Hollywood Brown. There's no real replacement on that caliber. So you're looking at Rashad Bateman and James Prochet, Devin Duvernay. It's not the sexiest group of skill players that he's working with. Even if they get into the playoffs, which is by no means a guarantee, then I say that Lamar could perform well, and they could still be one and done.
They could still be one and done. I think that's just the unfortunate reality of the AFC this year. If you are going to be competing in that league, it's going to be a gauntlet. It's going to be tough whoever you go up against, especially come playoff time. And I think Lamar Jackson just, he still has to prove something to me once you get to crunch time.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. I believe in Lamar. I think that postseason breakout is coming. But looking at the competition in the AFC and his supporting cast, I'm not sure it happens this year, especially in regards to getting into the win column. Let's move to the NFC side of the bracket. The Dallas Cowboys, America's team. Do you think that after winning the NFC East, they miss the playoffs?
Certainly a possibility with that division. It feels like nobody has ever been able to take a stranglehold of that one. No, I think they still make the playoffs. They've got so many weapons there. I think Dak Prescott, even though he's still another year older, if he's healthy, they'll compete. They should get into the playoffs and then eventually lose early on.
So it is division or bust in the NFC East. These teams aren't coming out of the wild card. I look at it and say Dak is better than Jalen Hurts, at least in barring a jump from the ladder. The skill positions, I would say, go to the Eagles now with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Miles Sanders, a better offensive line.
And the Cowboys have a good number of skilled position players for sure. But
yeah, but
is
I don't
Ezekiel
think
Elliott
good.
The same
it's,
guy? I don't
right.
know.
Right, and it's CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup. That, to me, is not as good as A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, for instance. I think with Dallas Goedert, I would give the nod at tight end to Philadelphia. You know, Zeke ahead of Miles Sanders for sure. But and it's crazy to say at one point when you consider the Cowboys' offensive line was such a source of pride, but injuries and some reshuffling, I think Philly's O-line is better right now.
Interesting. I think it's all going to come down to the quarterback play. You mentioned it, Jalen Hurts. Will he be able to take that next leap? He showed his ability as a runner and a guy who can extend plays. Still think he needs a lot of work in the passing game. As of right now, I think Dak Prescott gives the Cowboys a slight edge in the division.
Last year, the Cowboys should have beaten the Niners at home in the playoffs, but this is a franchise that perennially underachieved since the late 90s. So I look at Jerry Jones, and I look at Mike McCarthy, and even though Nick Sirianni is only entering year two, I've seen enough not to trust either one of those two on the Cowboys side of things. When it comes to Sirianni and the Eagles, it seems like a at least respectable, somewhat buttoned-up operation to this point, sample size being small. So I think that Philadelphia, even if the defense is comparable, albeit less talented, talent is not what traditionally holds back the Cowboys. And so I think that the Eagles, they're at least close enough that their discipline is going to win out.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. I could definitely see Philly being the team to come out of the NFC East. It's going to be one of those two. I don't see the Giants putting it together at all, for sure. Going forward, I think Dallas definitely, however, has a good chance just because of Prescott. That's just the I keep going to that basic point. Like with Prescott under center.
It's the most important position
he's
in sports, so it's a good one to have on your
he's
side.
He's the best one from that conference. Not conference, that division, per se. So I think that's just my opinion. I think Dallas is going to make the playoffs and then lose in horrific fashion, a la Dez Bryant dropping the ball in the end zone
yeah,
with a chance to win
the game. Cowboys it up in the playoffs.
They'll find a way to blow it somehow.
This might be the last one that we have time for here. In what's most likely Tom Brady's last season, buy or sell that he goes out with another Lombardi trophy.
God, I really want to buy just because it feels like he's going to prove me wrong if I don't. I'm going to sell it just because I'm going to take the field and keep my fingers crossed that that somebody is able to step in his way, because otherwise it's going to get really crazy up here in the media world in New England.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And I mean, look, I think that they are the best team in the NFC on paper at this point in time where – I mean, again, it's still pretty much the same team that lifted the Lombardi 2 years ago. They were able to keep Chris Godwin. I know they lose Gronk. They bring in Kyle Rudolph. I don't know how much he has left in the tank, but they still have other good tight ends, like a Cameron Brate, for instance. There's so many weapons there, like a Mike Evans, for example. The defense is really good, and some of those pieces that were pretty young when he first got there, like a rookie Antoine Winfield Jr., now have two more years of added experience and are playoff-tested. I think the Bucs absolutely have the talent to win the Super Bowl. However, I think it is written in the stars, Brendan, that the Buffalo Bills are going to go from smacking Bill Belichick in the playoffs 1 year to sending Tom Brady out the door with a Super Bowl loss, and that the Bills, 4 years in a row, they lose it in the 90s. They are going to win this Super Bowl at Tom Brady's expense.
I like how you answered your last question while also answering the previous one. I don't know if I'm going to buy the Bills as a championship contender. Well, they are a contender. What am I talking about? But as a winner, I'm going to sell on that one as well. I feel like the curse is going to continue.
For the sake of taking the field?
For the sake of taking the field. They're going to be in the conversation at the end. I will be stunned if they're not in the AFC title game.
This is why Brendan's more measured than I, but nonetheless, I stand by it. Bills, Bucks, Bills Mafia, start planning the parade right now. You're winning this year's Super Bowl. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, we're going to put a bow on tonight's program, and you're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Kravitsky.
Closing time indeed here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Kravitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. Brendan, MLB trade deadline less than 2 weeks away on August 2nd. Where does Juan Soto end up?
If he gets traded, I think Bob Nightingale put out a tweet recently with seven teams he would go to. He had the Mariners, the Padres, the Giants, the Dodgers, the Cardinals, the Yankees, and the Mets listed on there. If I were to take a guess, I would say it would be either the Cardinals or the Mets based on my gut feeling. But is Aaron Judge leaving the Yankees? Maybe that causes the Yankees to come in and offer a deal here and try to cover their asses.
Mariners GM Jerry DePoto, he loves to wheel and deal, and J-Rod and Soto would be a fun pairing, probably unlikely though. I'm going to say it's the San Francisco Giants.
Interesting.
Don't want to see him in a Dodgers uniform. For Brian McDonald and Brendan Connolly, I'm Bobby Kravitsky. Thank you so much for listening. The Diehards will be back tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Enjoy the rest of the night. Enjoy the rest of your week.